This is the Oanda Podcast.
Well, this is the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts from around the world with all the latest business and market news. This morning, let's speak to Jeff Halley in Singapore. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Great to be here.
It's a pleasure. Let's start with the latest from the Asian markets. A mixed picture to start the week?
Yeah, look, most markets are a bit lower in Asia today, except for China. China markets have risen after China presented some extremely strong GDP data this morning. So they've bucked the trend. But we saw US equities retreat on Friday. And with the US holiday today for Martin Luther King Day, Asian markets mostly follow suit. So Singapore's down, the KOSPI, the Nikkei and Australia. We've also been complicated by the fact that over the weekend, the Trump administration announced another executive order preventing US companies from selling semiconductors to the Chinese telco Huawei.
Indeed, more of that in a moment or two. I just wanted to ask you about those GDP figures from China. Chinese economy growing at a faster rate than before the pandemic.
Yeah, look, there's certainly a recovery aspect to this. The year 2020 GDP will have grown by 2.3% when the dust settles. That's not great for China, but just about for everybody else in the world, that would be a wonderful number. What we're seeing here is a continuing acceleration of demand globally for made in China products. So after the lull of the March to June quarter, of course, caused by the COVID-19 pandemic and lockdowns everywhere, we've seen a relentless acceleration in demand for Chinese goods since then. These numbers have confirmed it, and it's my strong opinion that China will continue to lead the world out of this global recession in 2021.
Although, after a long period without hardly any cases of COVID-19, starting to return to China, is that any worry at all for those in charge of the Chinese economy?
I really believe it's only going to be an issue if we start seeing large mega cities such as Shanghai, Beijing, and other cities in the industrial heartlands and the financial heartlands start to suffer from lockdowns. China itself has actually been having COVID-19 cases imported for all of 2020, particularly along the border with Russia and China, where there's a lot of movement back and forth with commerce. Some of those cities have suffered quite regular outbreaks of COVID-19, not on huge scales, but fairly regular outbreaks. The thing about the Chinese government is that they have a lot of power, obviously, to impose restrictions, quarantines, movement controls. It's nothing for them to lock down an entire city and make sure it's properly locked down. So when the Chinese government tells you to do something, you do it. Now, in the West, we may find that a little hard to stomach, but actually, in the context of managing pandemics or stopping them in their tracks, it's actually a very effective form of governance. So I don't think we really have to be too concerned about that, because China probably has more tools at its disposal to manage these sorts of situations than just about any other country in the world.
You mentioned earlier the USA adding another Chinese company to its blacklist. Is this a last hurrah from the Trump administration?
Yeah, Johnny, to a certain extent, I believe it is, but it may not be the last hurrah. In the last 2 days of the administration, we may see more movement on this front, some more executive orders being thrown around. I believe that the market impact on it has been relatively muted because there's a very high chance, I believe, that a lot of these executive orders are going to be reversed by President Biden after Wednesday afternoon when he assumes power. And I suspect that's the feeling in the markets as well. We also have had very little visibility on what the Biden administration's foreign policy attitude will be to China, whether they're going to be as aggressive as Mr. Trump, which I find unlikely, but equally as unlikely, I don't think we're going to see them go back to the pre-Trump era either. I still believe that the Biden administration will still be quite firm with China, but we should see the toxicity in the relations dialed down a bit.
Indeed, and that Trump legacy that everybody talks about, obviously he has his major critics, particularly after what's happened over the last couple of weeks or so. But the way he took on China did actually get a lot of people's respect, and it'll be interesting to see how the Biden administration follows that. Same thing with Iran as well.
Yeah, I mean, the markets are pricing in that he's going to reach out to Iran and re-engage with their nuclear limitations agreement, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think that's a done deal at all. And I suspect that there are many out there who don't regard Iran as a reliable partner. I believe that relations with China have changed forever. And despite what you may say about Trump himself, and I know he's a polarizing figure, some of the underlying reasoning behind their attitude towards China does have merit. They have had predatory trade practices for a long time, including forced technology exchanges, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The list is long and we all sort of know what they are. So actually forcing China to play on a more level playing field, opening up their markets in response to Chinese companies being able to come over to international markets, et cetera, et cetera, it has merit. Now, how they chose to execute that policy, you could probably argue quite strongly with, but definitely there has been some gains in the Trump administration. You could also say the normalization of relations between the UAE and Israel was quite a foreign policy triumph as well. So it's not been without some wins, but they've been drowned out in the noise of everything else that's gone on.
Indeed, I was going to ask you about his legacy. And as you said, he has been the most polarizing president in history, but he has scored some wins. Do you think history will look a bit more kindly on the Trump administration? This is the last time we're going to speak before President Biden comes in. You've already alluded to it already, but do you think that the Trump administration overall, from an economic point of view, notwithstanding COVID, did rather well?
Well, the economy was running quite well before COVID-19 came along. There's no doubt about that. But it was actually starting to slow down. The world was actually entering a soft slowdown, a slowing of economic activity before COVID-19 went and changed the narrative completely. To a certain extent, I think there was an element of luck there. There's usually luck with US presidents. They all, like truly good politicians, claim economic success and then put the blame on poorer performance on their predecessors. So that's just politics. So I think he got a little bit lucky in that respect. I did note before COVID-19 that the US government was running $1 trillion deficits even before COVID-19 came along. So their accounts weren't looking great. He cut corporate taxes, and that was very well received, obviously, by corporate America. Can you say that he did much to make society more equal, to impact on social and economic exclusion and wealth inequality, some of these underlying problems that have been dogging American society and probably the underlying cause for a lot of the tension that we see in American society? I think the jury will be out on that one. I don't think that the Trump legacy, even when they look back at it in 50 years' time, will be really that favorably received by historians.
Okay, well, USA gearing up for the inauguration on Wednesday. As you mentioned before, US markets closed today for a public holiday. And it goes without saying that markets will be looking for as peaceful a transition as possible. We've got tens of thousands of US troops and police on the streets of all the major cities right across the country. So they'll be hoping for peace over the next few days and weeks because it can affect markets. It affects all of us, of course. They'll be edgy, won't they, just to make sure that things don't go too badly in that transition.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. There is some nerves around, and I think part of the reason we saw equity markets fall on Friday afternoon was investors looking at the event risk for this week and saying to themselves, let's just take some exposure off the boards. I don't think it was any more than that. We saw US bond prices rally as well, which says to me that investors were rotating out of equities and putting it more in those haven asset classes like US bonds, the sort of places you put money when the world's a bit uncertain. I remain skeptical as to whether there'll be mass protests on Wednesday, simply I think because a lot of America is in shock about what happened last week and the sheer weight of policing. They were caught effectively with their pants down with the Capitol invasion after the Trump rally, and that's definitely not going to happen again. I think if we get through the inauguration without any incident, then we'll see stock markets rally.
Yes, and they'll of course be hoping that the new commander-in-chief sticks to his promises of that mega stimulus for the American economy. Trillions pumped into the US economy, they hope.
Yeah, look, 1.9 trillion as a starting number is pretty impressive. I mean, that's really just fiscal stimulus to get America through the latest rounds of COVID-19 and its effects on the economy, to help out the states and to actually get the COVID-19 vaccine campaign properly organized and out there in scale, which needs to happen. Whether we see that pass with those headline numbers through the Senate is another thing altogether. And we have to remember that some of the Democrat senators, they're not out there on the left, as is the perception. Some of these Democrat senators from the South are very much centre to slightly right. So they may not fully buy into spending largesse from the government anyway. There are also some fiscal rules like the Byrd rule, which I won't go into, that act as brakes on government spending within the US Senate. So I know that President Biden has stated that he'd like bipartisan agreement. I think that is going to be very challenging. So I believe we're going to see a bill, and it probably will be over $1 trillion. But whether it's near to $1.9 trillion, I'm slightly skeptical. I think it's going to have to go on a severe diet in order to get through the Senate particularly.
Before we have a look ahead to the rest of the week's offerings, I wanted to ask you about Deliveroo, raising an extra $180 million from existing investors. This is what it said on Sunday, including minority shareholder Amazon, of course. That values the business at more than $7 billion, and it looks like there's going to be a public offering in the next few months.
Well, you know, this is another, I guess, if you want to call it a tech company coming to market. I have a feeling that the reception may be more Uberish than exuberant.
Does that mean you're suggesting it doesn't make any money?
I'm being polite here, yeah. And it also shows you the crazy valuations that are running around at the moment for scaled startups, although I guess Deliveroo can't really be classified as a startup now. I question the motives of it. I mean, it's clearly a mechanism for institutional shareholders to exit, to take profit. That's their want. Unfortunately, Joe Public buys the stock and sometimes things don't work out well. You know, if the world returns to more normality in 2021, perhaps there will be less demand for its services. But that price seems a very richly priced $7 billion for Deliveroo. So, I mean, I can see that if they do have an IPO, the shares are going to rocket on the first day, because you can pretty much float anything on the stock market at the moment, and it seems to double in price on the first day. It's very much like the late 1980s, if anybody can remember those days, or perhaps closer to the tech bubble of the 2000s. As a long-term business sustaining that valuation, I believe Deliveroo will have challenges.
Unfortunately, I can remember those halcyon days in the late 1980s, Jeff. It seems like another lifetime ago.
It certainly was, before the age of the internet and mobile phones.
Yeah. We all actually talk to each other in person. Finally, before I let you go, let's look ahead to the rest of the week's big business news to come. Apart from a new president, what else is going on?
We've got US earnings season coming through all of this week, and it will be over the next couple of weeks. Although I don't think there'll be particularly strong market impact from those numbers, but it will give us an idea of the state of corporate America as it is in 2020, but also more interestingly, how they see the world in 2021. We saw Citibank and JP Morgan CEOs taking a rather more cautious outlook towards 2021 on Friday. And that also partially explained why equity markets retreated. We have the Bank of Japan rate meeting on Thursday. There is speculation in Tokyo they are going to tinker with their quantitative easing and yield curve control program, and we've seen the yen rally on that. I'm frankly would be very surprised if they did anything, but that's always the possibility. Malaysia will probably cut rates, but otherwise we have a lot of tier two data coming out this week in the world, but no tier one data. We saw China GDP today, and that's really the highlight of the week until we get down towards initial jobless claims in the US on Thursday. So lots of noise, not much substance. And I think the real event that the world will be watching this week is a peaceful transfer of power and a new American president.
Yep, let's hope so. Jeff Halley, Oanda Senior Market Analyst for Asia Pacific. Thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.